Hey, it's Anna Sale, and I want to thank you for listening to Death, Sex, and Money, where I explore the big questions and hard choices that are often left out of polite conversation. You can hear new episodes ad-free every week on Amazon Music, where you can find Death, Sex, and Money and all of your Slate favorites without the ads.
Hi, this is Dahlia Lithwick, host of Slate's legal podcast, Amicus. If you're listening to this show, you might be interested in Amicus's live show that we're hosting in Washington, D.C. on Tuesday, May the 14th. My colleague, Mark Joseph Stern, and I will be talking to some amazing guests, including Sherrilyn Ifill and a sitting state Supreme Court justice, all about how originalism, a relatively recently invented way of interpreting the Constitution, has taken over the Supreme Court and radically reshaped the law. It's been doctrinal rocket fuel for the conservative legal movement and facilitated the rolling back of abortion rights, the expansion of gun rights, and the obliteration of the separation of church and state. And as another wildly consequential Supreme Court term careers to its end, the court's originalists are on a tear. But there's something you can do about it, and we hope you'll join us in D.C. on May 14th to explore the possible pathways out of the current situation. Go to slate.com/amicuslive for tickets.
This is Death, Sex, and Money from WNYC. I'm Anna Sale. And this week, I want to share something with you that our colleagues over at Radiolab have made for kids. It's a podcast series called Terrestrials, and it's all about finding wonder, comfort, and rebelliousness in nature. We're going to share a little bit of one of my favorite episodes of Terrestrials and a conversation I had with Lulu Miller, the co-host of Radiolab, who led its creation. When we talked, she told me the podcast comes from a very personal place for her. She's a newish parent herself. Her kids are 4 and 1.5. And during the first phases of the pandemic, when the world seemed to be breaking down, Lulu found herself looking to nature for answers. She was surprised, though, that this led her to make a show for kids, because she told me before having them herself, she really felt like she didn't get them.
I was the youngest in my whole extended family. I did not babysit. Like, I did not know what kids were. I was really creeped out and intimidated by kids. So I had massive questions on if I would know what I was doing, if I would like it, if I could do it. Like, big, like, what's a kid questions.
Were you someone who always knew you wanted to be a parent?
I did, yeah. There were certainly times where I thought maybe it wasn't going to happen because, I was like, I was single in my 30s and then fell in love with a woman. And like, I think I always knew I wanted to. And there were moments where I was like, oh, is this not going to happen? And then it did happen.
And like, what did you notice how like parenting and parenting specifically during a pandemic, like, did you notice it change your creative appetites in your work?
Hugely. Yeah. I think it's been the biggest creative shift in my life. I think I went into it, I had kids somewhat late. I was 36 once I got pregnant. And I think I went into it with like the lowest of low expectations. I think I had a worst case scenario in my head of like, I'll never have time to do work and I won't want to and I'll be too scattered and worried and parasitized. My brain will be parasitized and I'll be a zombie and I won't be able to work. And I think part of me waited, in part just because of the life journey I took, but I think I also wanted to just be okay if I, like, never did anything creative again, which I think now I see is, like, this cultural message we get that's really toxic. And in certain ways, it is realistic. There is a big change. And I think what happened was just watching our first son wake into the world, have questions, mix up names, misidentify things, play with language, and seeing the potential in their minds and like how much they love a good story. They like some fear. They like real humor. I just think of them as these like psychedelic beings that I want to entertain and I want to inhabit their brain a little bit more too. And that was my big change. I kind of thought kids, I had a really patronizing view of them. Like, you got to use dumb, simple words and keep it real easy and safe. And actually living intimately in a household with two of them, it's like, no, they're drawn to fear. They're drawn to questions. They're drawn to the hard stuff and real humor. And so I think suddenly living with them and liking them made me get actually hungry about creating work for them.
Oh, that's so, it's interesting that you're, the great fear before becoming a parent, you use the word parasitic, like you thought it was going to, like, becoming a parent would, like, suck away your ability to
100%.
Be productive. And then now you describe this, like, pull to, like, inhabit their tiny brains, like, you're kind of parasite on their wonder and childlike.
I am. Oh, I am. I'm the worst. I'm parasiting their wonder. I mean, literally, I will give him credit. My older kid, one day my wife, like 2 years ago, my wife was like, who's your favorite? I don't know why she said this. I think she was fishing. She was like, who's your favorite person in the world? And he paused and he goes, and he is very into trucks. Still is, always has been. Trucks are his thing. And he just pauses and he goes, Truckee Rhodes. And we were like, what? Like, who's Truckee Rhodes? Is he a character? We looked him up. He's not. And so he, like, invented Truckee Rhodes, who then became this, like, character in our lives and now is pitched as a children's book that is coming out soon.
Wait,
and,
are,
like,
you serious?
100%. Like, it's
Truckee Rhodes is coming. You're
Truckee
manifesting
Rhodes is
Truckee Rhodes?
Like, I wrote a book for him for Christmas, like, because I wanted to bring Truckee Rhodes to life. And he's just, like, a super generic construction dude. And he sees different kinds of trucks. Anyway, I wrote the book just out of fun to, like, entertain my kid and make Truckee Rhodes real. And then I was like, this is half decent. And then I pitched it. But, like, he invented that. I'm just like, yeah, I'm ripping them off. I'm just parasiting off their, you know, yeah, what they see, what they want to see, their ideas. Like, I am the parasite. And they're parasitic too.
And as you started thinking about, like, what you wanted to make in your work.
Yeah.
And you're thinking about those ideas, you're watching this happen in your home with your children. How did you come to think, like, I want to make something for young listeners. I want to make something for young ears that's going to help them experience this universe with, yeah, experience this universe. Like, where did that come from?
I think that it was, like, February and we were in the heart of the pandemic. And I was starved. Like, I was starved for nature. Like, I just wanted to look. I wanted to fill my ears with leaves and animals. And I wanted to look there. But I also knew that doing that in a time of, like, pandemic, social unrest, like, so much going on, almost felt irresponsible as an adult journalist to just go tell stories about flowers, you know? And then I suddenly thought, like, a comment we get time and time again at Radiolab is, like, more wonder, more science. Oh, I really loved this. You know, can you make a feed that's just for kids where you're not going to accidentally hear something really tough? And so I knew that there was the hunger there. Like, Radiolab had made a Radiolab for Kids feed at the beginning of the pandemic because parents were asking for stuff to listen to. And so there was hunger. And then I kind of just thought, like, what would it sound like to make something for kids and try to not do it in a patronizing way, but just do it in a way that's like, I'm your camp counselor. Want to hang out with me? Yeah.
That's so, well, you know what that makes me think about, Lulu, is it makes me think about how, like, I don't know if this is actually true, but I do notice that since I've become a parent, I take in a lot more media about nature. Like, there's just, that's what children's books are about. Like, animals, nature, like, look at this world around us. Like, so it's interesting that you felt the nature pull first and then you were like, kids can be my excuse.
I mean, that
kids
is the
programming.
That is the truth. Like, that is the truth. Like, I was hungry. I was starved in ways, sort of literal and spiritual.
Yeah. And so as you when you finally gave yourself permission to fully be the camp counselor guide on these episodes and make this thing, when you were picturing who was listening to you, who did you picture?
I think in a weird way, myself as a 10-year-old, who was outwardly very chipper and trying to delight everyone around her, but inwardly very, really struggling and struggling in particular with the sense that our world is known and flat and humans are cruel and there's gravity and you can't escape and there's no magic. And so I think in a certain way, it's that grumpy, sad kid who's convinced this place sucks, trying to be it doesn't entirely. If you look close, if you keep asking questions, you might see that we don't have it all figured out. And I don't know, that for me has always, to this day, creates a feeling of possibility that is very crucial to me, to feeling okay. So I think it's kind of trying to cheer up that little kid who's not trying to look kiddy, but might appreciate it in their room by themselves or on a walk, out in the world with some headphones, really not telling anyone else they're listening, but listening, grateful for it.
And maybe it seems like the logic of this is very clear to you, but it's very interesting. The idea that there are exceptions to the rules is something that is relieving and
hugely. Yeah.
And why is that? Why are the rules to young you and to current you feel bleak?
This was kind of the upbringing I had with a scientist father and what I actually do believe today. But it's just there's just your time on Earth. It's all random. There isn't inherently meaning. There's just the meaning maybe you make, but that's all ultimately constructed. We're all going to die. Humans, like all animals, are inherently wired to be greedy. And I don't know, there's just a bleak, there's a pointlessness if you look at it.
Nihilism.
Nihilism, totally. Which, of course, when you're fed right and rested and grow up with a backbone and some confidence, nihilism can be amazing. Carpe diem, seize the day, everything, nothing means anything, whatever. But when you're struggling, when you're sunken, when you're not sure of yourself or your chances, or when you see people being horrifically cruel to people you love or to yourself, it is, we all know the nihilism thing can be hard on a hard day. And it could be a reason not to go on, literally. It's just okay, well, if nothing matters and I happen to be inhabiting a body and a brain that makes life hurt a lot, why be here, And that's fair and that's valid. And I think for me, seeing moments where the world doesn't behave in the way you thought it did actually shows not so much that there are exceptions, but it's just these reminders that we actually don't know the rules. We actually whether it's we do an episode about a mule having a baby, which, mules are supposed
to
be sterile. That's the whole thing. That's the whole one of the most primal fundamental laws of nature is a mule is a product of a donkey and a horse, two different species. And yeah, you can engineer a hybrid that maybe you make a mule. But then nature has barriers in place that will not allow it to carry on. And that's just how nature, that's just what a species is. It's isolated from other species. But then every now and then there's a mule that has a baby and we went and met that baby. That's not supposed to happen.
After the break, an excerpt of one of my favorite episodes of Terrestrials about surfing. Let me tell you a good story. It was late on a Sunday afternoon, and my family and I had been away and rolled into the driveway, and everyone was worn out from traveling and getting hangry. But waiting for us was a solution. A Hungry Root box filled with healthy, grabbable snacks and a few different dinner meals to choose from. We tore into this thing like a pack of wild animals and ate all the snacks. But they were healthy, whole ingredients, fresh produce. And then we were set for dinner a few hours later, which only took about 15 minutes to prep and cook and get on the table. I was so grateful to my past self for doing my current self this solid by ordering this box. And it was easy. I took a short quiz to tell Hungry Root what kinds of meat my family eats, the sorts of flavors we like, any dietary restrictions we have, or just things we're trying to avoid, and when I wanted the box to be delivered. Right now, Hungry Root is offering Death, Sex, and Money listeners 40% off your first delivery and free veggies for life. Just go to hungryroot.com/DSM to get 40% off your first delivery and get your free veggies. That's hungryroot.com/DSM. And don't forget to use our link so they know we sent you. I want to thank you for listening and for all your support as we at Death, Sex, and Money have made our move to Slate. Your stories, voice memos, and emails have meant so much to the team. As part of this transition, there's a new way to support our show financially at Slate, our new home, and you'll get something special in return. Subscribe to Slate Plus, and you'll not only support our work on Death, Sex, and Money, you'll get access to new benefits, including listening to us and all of the other great shows Slate makes, like Slow Burn and Decoder Ring, without any ads or sponsor breaks. To subscribe, just click Try Free at the top of the Death, Sex, and Money show page on Apple Podcasts, or visit slate.com/DSM+ to get access wherever you listen. Thanks. This is Death, Sex, and Money from WNYC. I'm Anna Sale. Terrestrials is a new series for kids from our colleagues over at Radiolab. And one episode I really loved introduced me to A.J. Dungo, a graphic novelist and surfer.
Did you grow up loving the water?
No, not at all. I was terrified. I would just sort of sink. The feeling of starting to swallow water and trying to open your eyes in chlorinated water and it just burns. It wasn't fun to get out of your comfort zone.
I mean, how did you finally get past that?
That would be my late partner, Kristen.
Late, meaning she got sick and passed away.
We were high school sweethearts, and she was this fearless, confident, beautiful surfer.
And she didn't stop surfing, even after she had a surgery that made her lose her leg.
I think it was seeing her pick up a board and go out and charge with a smile on her face and ruin her prosthetic leg in the process. I was like, man, when you're in the presence of someone like that, you want to do stuff to impress them, obviously.
So he finally put his fear of water aside, hopped onto a surfboard, and wobbly tried to stand so that Kristen would think it was cool.
Yeah.
So we learn how surfing became something AJ could do to connect with his grief and memories of Kristen. And because Lulu is telling this story, we also learn about the history of surfing in 19th century Hawaii and how it works when standing on water seems to break all the rules. Here's a little more of that episode.
Okay, and now I'm going to turn to my scary page in my notebook where I've been scribbling things about the physics of surfing, mm-hmm. because and trying to understand what's going on that allows humans to stand on water. Do you have any understanding of how the heck it is possible scientifically, or
so
how it works?
There's a few important things to have a rideable wave. The first thing would be swell.
Swell. AJ explains there are so many factors at play. The swell of the wave, the speed of the wave, the slope of the ocean floor, the size of your surfboard.
Your height, your weight, your body type.
How gravity is pushing down and buoyancy is pushing up and thrust is pushing forward and drag is going back.
Another factor is wind. So if there's wind blowing out to sea, that's the sort of condition that you really hope for.
That's weird. Wouldn't wind coming from the sand slow the wave down and kill its mojo?
Well, that's kind of like what you want, because if you have onshore winds, which is the wind blowing towards you, there's nothing to hold up the water to make it into that perfect curl, that crest.
And if you zoom into that crest, this is where things get really wild. Because it turns out, in a wave, most of the water particles, aren't really moving that much.
The particles in the water are kind of staying in place, and this mysterious orb of energy is just passing through, making it seem like it's undulating.
Except, AJ explains, at the crest.
The little white part that you see, that's where the water particles are undergoing their greatest acceleration. And that makes them faster than the underlying wave. So they're shooting, like they're flying off the top of the wave before falling under gravity's influence.
So they just get like a momentary break from gravity?
Yeah, they're sort of in their own moment.
That is thrilling to think that for a moment, that tip of the water, the crest, the white part where it's breaking, there is an escape, not just in a spiritual way, not just in an emotional way, but like physically.
Yeah, you can see it. Like you can visually see them rushing ahead of the rest of the wave.
That's AJ Dungo talking to Radiolab's Lulu Miller from the episode of Terrestrials called The Water Walker. You can find the whole Terrestrials series in the podcast feed called Radiolab for Kids, and there's also a link in our show notes. Give it a listen. I think you'll like it, whether you're a kid or not. Tracy Hunt produced this episode. I'm Anna Sale, and this is Death, Sex, and Money from WNYC.